kiss, your kiss, Medusa's touch. Turn into a pillar of salt. To die now would be perfection. Then my loneliness closes in, so I drink a German wine and drift in dreams of other lives and greater times. And drift in dreams of other lives and greater times. Grab my mind, drunken thoughts of wounds and men. Why does the devil leave for us this legacy of loneliness, this cry for healing, and a dagger's thrust with your hair?
Good evening, everyone. And hello. You're listening to Revision Media at revisionmedia.org. Today is Thursday, January 21, 2021, and this is the Roundtable Unlimited. This and every Thursday, we present Roundtable Unlimited, featuring unlimited moderators, participants, and topics. Listeners are encouraged to call in and join us weekly for our regular round of open forum discussion. If you choose to call in, that phone number is toll-free in the U.S. If you're overseas, you catch the archives and want to contribute in future, feel free to email me at the Revision Media or Richard Carey emails. And I could supply you with a web browser alternative so you can connect with without paying long distance overseas fees, which I know the toll free would not accommodate for such long distance. But that is toll free for in the States, folks. So feel free to jump in, you know, now or any Thursday, bring a topic to the floor or address something already in discussion. 855-492-6049. And I believe I have the host of the previous broadcast here with me, Mr. Graham
Sutherland. Yes, I'm here, Richard. Yeah.
So sit back probably after doing a whole show.
Sorry, you broke up a bit there, Richard. I never caught that.
Oh, well, no. You're probably wanting to take a breather after your broadcast. No callers, just a monologue for an hour there. That was a good show. I enjoyed your content.
Yeah, well, I've been really digging in deep and trying to. I'm very curious, Richard. I like to know for myself. I like to know what's going on. So, you know, I've been watching and listening to a lot of stuff. You know, I don't know, probably about 10 or 12 documentaries since last week, five or six just in the last couple of days. I just, like I say, just very curious. I've got to turn over every stone, you know. I can't just walk away and not knowing. That's just, the way I'm wired. So, I draw my own conclusions. I'm not too easily, sold a whole narrative from any one person, you know?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. I mean, it's hard to tell, though. I mean, so many conflicting stories and a lot of people out there with motives for misinformation, disinformation as well.
I know, and emotions are involved here as well, Richard. A lot of people I speak to, particularly Democrats, I have to say, I mean, I don't really have a dog in this fight, so it doesn't make any difference to me, but I've noticed in particular an awful lot of Democrats get really emotional and kind of blind. They're kind of blind about, you know, a lot of very obvious facts. It's almost like they're so entrenched into the kind of democratic way of thinking. They can't see outside that box. It's tragic, you know. You feel like you're talking to a brick wall.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we've been over so many of these topics. I mean, if you look at the amount the lockdown is even being politicized more than I expected in the States, because this is a global thing. Europe is dealing with this so much, but yet we have the mayor in Chicago loosening up lockdowns magically on the 20th. We have the World Health Organization putting out a new notice that the PCR tests are giving a lot of false positives because of too many cycles. They're finally admitting this just now as well, perfectly on cue with Biden's inauguration. It, you know, and Amazon saying that, and even though they weren't willing to help Trump distribute vaccines, they are suddenly offering their vehicle and distribution team and services wholeheartedly to the Biden administration to accomplish his goal of however many people he wants to jab with his poisons in the first 100 days or however. So it is just absurd how even the lockdown PCR test hoax agenda is more politicized here than I thought. Of course, not completely likely to go away under his administration. The motives for tracking us, nanotechnology, DNA alterations, and just the profits and compliance established with vaccines, those are important points for the establishment, for those in power. But they're going to try to make him look successful where Trump wasn't, you know, with the lockdowns, with the vaccines. It's just a little disgusting. And as far as domestic politics, convincing people on that topic, that's even more frustrating. You know, I mean, leftists, I think to a good extent, it's in their brain makeup, their wiring in their brain, Graham. I'm not sure you can change a leftist in most situations. And then I shared an article less than a week ago. I think I did include you with the people I put it around to, and it was mentioning the differences in the facial expressions between conservatives and liberals. It was stating that the facial recognition software has like what a 65 or 70% accuracy, I think 70% accuracy rating. Stanford University is where they were conducting most of this. A Stanford scientist says he can tell if you're a liberal just by looking at your face. And they have a lot of diagrams, even some included in the article here. But I think some could account for lifestyle, of course, in the way they're even mentioning. It was explained that liberals tend to smile more intensely and genuinely, leaving them with a different wrinkle pattern as they age, for example. Meanwhile, conservatives tend to be healthier, drink less alcohol and smoke less, and have a different diet. Attributes that affected the skin's health and texture, they say. And the thought that algorithms can determine your political views from a quick scan on your face is a frightening one. They conclude there, but getting back to earlier in this article, I found some of the other attributes curious as well, in the differences in the face. Looking surprised is a common tactic or a trait of the leftist brain. And looking more, now I don't want to misquote here, so I'm trying to locate where it it points this part out. Where did that go? It is curious as far as, what are they going to do with this now? Now that they're trying to demonize all Trump supporters. And where they're going to accuse you because of your facial layout. Hey, are you a racist? Come over here. You know, you may have to take some classes before you get your driver's license back and your banking privileges. Yep. That could be our future, right?
Yep. Yeah. there's a lot of echoes of logic and all that, I have to say. Yeah. That seems to be quite astute observations.
Yeah, they said 72% accuracy is what they were getting from the predictability in the facial images, the recognition software between conservative and liberal. One of the most significant facial features that differentiate from both political parties' faces, aside from gender, age, and race, was head orientation or emotional expression. The way you cringe parts of your skull and your head. An emotional expression. And he also said liberals were more likely to stare directly at the camera, like deer in the headlights with the liberals, and more likely to look surprised than disgusted. So I guess conservatives can look disgusted and not with that deer in the headlights stare because they actually have something going on up there and are, of course, disgusted with the direction things have been taking around them. That just makes sense. That's just pretty logical, right, Graham?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Liberals are surprised that things aren't the way they're being taught by the Marxist professors, so they have that surprised look and staring at the direction of what the camera in this case is, just like a blank, as I say, the deer in the headlights, classic.
Yeah, I mean these are things that, they come up in sociology quite a lot. I find that, diet and, facial expressions and all that kind of stuff, I find that really, and lifestyle and everything, I find that quite interesting. And there obviously is common themes, that run through the different social classes, never mind political classes, but social classes. There's obviously common factors, without a doubt, it does. It makes sense. It really does.
Well, this Kaczynski, who was heading the research, he has previous work data mining with the firm Cambridge Analytica ahead of the 2016 presidential election.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
There was a lot uncovered related to social media manipulation and personal data mining, manipulation, a lot of online treachery, connected with them. He also worked as an advisor on Faceception, a company that uses facial recognition algorithms to determine if someone is a terrorist, pedophile, or a criminal. And they say China has been deploying facial recognition cameras for years to monitor its citizens. This sort of surveillance is coming to America. Actually, it's already here. Now, this also questions, could wearing a face mask render facial recognition cameras useless in these ways? So is this going against their agenda, giving them a motive to do away with this eventually? They already have, of course, things set up for a fall guy for the economic situation, though, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, now it's time. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if there's no military intervention, you know, before March time, I mean, God help America. They're going to need all the help they can get. It's just going to implode. It really is. It's just going to implode.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is like an adrenaline shot in the arm for neo-Bolshevik policies and tactics in the administration and enforced by big tech, corporations, media of all types. I mean, we were already on this path with Trump, okay? We saw how much he allowed for the treatment of people like Kyle Rittenhouse, and then how all those BLM riots all summer were treated. And then, well, even going back to Charlottesville, I mean, what, he said there were good and bad on both sides. He pretty much tried to not even comment, basically. And then, well, what we have now, I don't know. If he knew he was going to have this much difficulty being reelected anyway, perhaps he could have been a lot more hardcore. But people like Jared Kushner whispering in his ear, never wanting him to truly appeal to white America, because Jared is for tribal interests who, with leftist tactics, other than helping the tribe, like to help a lot of non-whites in a divide and conquer anti-white strategy at this time and place. Then we find out how much Pence has, you'd have to say at this point, Mike Pence has always been a mole. He's never been in Trump's best interests. We just found out his true colors in the 11th hour. Wouldn't you say that's an accurate assessment?
Yes, I would. I don't think he suddenly turned. I don't think it's like that at all. But I also think he's a Mason. So that means his first allegiance is to the Lodge.
Okay. Yeah. Those were some compelling videos that we were sharing on the 6th. Later that day in Congress, he had this strange handing of some sort of gold coin, some sort of coin to him.
That's right.
You can only assume it's largely symbolic, and then many are claiming that it was definitely a Masonic handshake which accompanied the passing of the coin to him.
It looked like it, Richard. I watched it in slow motion over and over again. There was something else weird happened as well, though. There was a third party there. And after he got the coin passed into his hand, the other guy who didn't, you know, he didn't, not the guy that handed him a coin, just someone that happened to be standing beside the guy who handed him a coin, he touched his hand or did something as well. He touched Mike Pence's hand in quite a strange kind of way. Did you notice that?
No, not really. Have to go back.
It was immediately after the guy put the coin in his hand, and Mike Pence looked at it in his hand, and he actually put it in his other hand and looked at it again. But before he did that, this other random guy that was there, he put his hand up underneath Mike Pence's hand as if to say, there you go, you know, but he touched him. Or, he touched his hand. It wasn't a handshake. He just sort of touched the underside of his hand or something. It's quite bizarre. I replayed it over and over again because I was trying to understand what he was doing. It didn't seem to make any sense. He didn't touch the palm of his hand. He seemed to touch either his fingertips or underneath his hand. This is a third-party guy I'm on about now, not the guy that handed him a coin. It was quite strange. It's almost like he was kind of like validating it or something, you know, like, I don't know how to put it, you know, like you get somebody that proposes somebody that proposes something and then you'll get a seconder, you know, it was a yes. bit, it looked,
a
it
subtle,
looked a bit like
a subtle what, signal, sorry? A subtle signal to the others in the room who would know what it meant, but some, yes. like another vouch for the person in question, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. It was a strange one. Like, it would mean something to the people in his lodge anyway, that's for sure.
Well, just like, that hints of initiation, similar to the category of incrimination. Incrimination, which is very often required to get into inner circles of power. I mean, many out there suggest, with the whole Epstein Island, how could so many high-profile people fall into such blatant honey traps? You know, with these underage girls at this island with all these shady connected characters, you can't but assume that there are cameras recording in every room. But of course, it's, like Dr. Patrick Slattery, for one, he was pointing out recently, a good point I've thought of myself in the past that, a lot of times these people were probably told, well, look, the only way we can trust you and bring you in is so that you can be more, a chosen, team player for a lot of upgrades, in your work, promotions and the like, opportunities. We need incriminating evidence on you. You have to willingly do this. Like here's some attractive underage girl or this or that. We need evidence on you to know that you'll be trustworthy and not rat on us, basically. I could see that being very realistically how most of Epstein's island business was conducted. What say you?
Oh yeah, for sure. That's exactly how it works. They set each other up with honey traps. I mean, it's known that's what they do. And they'll make sure there's plenty of drinking drugs available, so you're pretty high, pretty drunk. Before you even get set up, you know? So, yeah, it's all very clever. And then, of course, whatever you do, it's filmed. You know, the film you're doing, whatever you do, and then you later find out that girl you slept with was only 14 or whatever, and, you broke the law. And, it's really twisted when you think about it. Setting people up like that, and it's dirty. It's really dirty.
Sure. In some cases, they may only know some levels to which Here they think they're only cheating on their wife on camera and don't know the girl's underage. Depending on the personality, yeah, they may only tell them so much ahead of time of what they're really going to have evidence on them for. That's another good point, actually.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the protocols a lot lately, and I thought sometimes we could incorporate dissertations of varying protocols interwoven in the roundtable once in a while. It could be interesting, you know. I mean, a given caller can submit a quote from one of the protocols. I mean, just a fraction of one of them would suffice. There's, what is it, 24? I want to say. I was checking some bits out earlier from one. Checking out some bits earlier from a copy I have that seems like a pretty good translation, pretty good source. I should share the link with you. But, you know, kind of like Bible study, but it would be protocols study. What do you think?
Well, what's a protocol? I'm not quite following.
Oh, you know what I mean. The protocols. The protocols of the learned elders of Zion.
Oh, those protocols. Right, okay.
I don't know why I found that so funny.
Well, no, I mean, protocols is quite a...
Okay.
It's quite a wide sort of subject, you know?
Some people, though, they figure if you're not more specific, that's the default assumption, what you're referring to, but... Yeah. I mean, and of course, some say it's a forgery, but they've been saying that for over 100 years now already, that it's a forgery, you know? It's and even then, they were saying, well, look how much has already come to fruition and been accurate. And now, 100 years later, we're still saying that. So put that in perspective.
But, yeah, totally.
But yeah, there's what, 24 of them, and if you whenever possible, if one of the callers wanted to come in with an excerpt from one of them, a line or a couple lines, because so much of it is relevant in this current era, because we're, even if history does not repeat, it certainly does rhyme. Quite often.
Yeah, indeed.
And
yeah,
so,
indeed.
Yeah. So in that sense, I can find it to be useful and bring a lot of different people together who are against this far-left agenda, which many interpret in different ways. Some will even say the left-right paradigm is a farce, but you can't deny some of these attributes. Like what I say, the neo-Bolshevik attributes that we're seeing at play here, which are clearly the enemy attacking the society we live in, or the Western society of our nations here. And, I mean, the protocols can unite religious Christians and non-Christians, Christians and even those who are not necessarily religious, or at least in the traditional sense, as well. I mean, it's a... and of course, those who are a little wary about naming the tribe, talking about Jewish power, I mean, they're a little more comfortable talking about Zionism and Zionists. And I understand how in some countries, you know, I mean, in Europe, it's worse in different countries than others, and who you are and how much your material reaches out to others, you know, to what extent you may be prosecuted, but there are real concerns, so I get that too. And so the protocols and talking about Zionism related to it, for people who are new to Bolshevism, Marxism as a danger, a threat to the Western world as well, there are just a lot of attributes it
intersects of different people. You see what I mean?
Yes, yes, I see exactly what you mean.
Hmm.
Sorry, I muted my microphone for a minute there because I was chopping a log. And I didn't want to subject you to that noise.
Great, thank you.
It was just a one log. That would be quite an interesting concept, really. To pull that in, because to a lot of people, it's just this airy-fairy thing that they've only heard about in the distance. You know, they don't realise we're talking about a document, a teaching, a way of thinking. So, yeah, for that reason, it would be good, you know?
Sure. I have a similar way of interpreting it. I mean, there's one quote here I might submit today for start. This is near the end of protocol number 7. Okay. We must compel the governments of the Goyim to take action in the direction favored by our widely conceived plan. Already approaching the desired consummation, but what we shall represent as public opinion, secretly prompted by us through the means of that so-called great power, the press, which, with a few exceptions that may be disregarded, is already entirely in our hands. That's the first half of the quote. And
right.
That's definitely occurring now. I mean, compelling the governments to take action with their widely conceived plans largely through the press. That certainly is. And yeah, the corporations, the money men who own that press. And then they go on. In a word, to sum up our system of keeping the governments of the Goyim in Europe in check, we shall show our strength to one of them by terrorist attempts, and to all, if we allow the possibility of a general rising against us, we shall respond with the guns of America or China or Japan.
Right. Well.
Terrorist attempts. I mean, BLM or alleged MAGA supporters. You know, this domestic terrorism bill we have now. And responding toward Europe with the guns of America, China, or Japan. But in this day and age now, all right, 100 years later, in this particular scenario at least, perhaps taking the guns away from Americans is more where the concern lies at the moment. Because, you know, Biden, that's his biggest focus right now, is what a lot of articles are pointing out, elaborating on, is going after the Second Amendment. Because, well, as much as they're taking away that First Amendment, they know they have to come after the Second Amendment here. The way Americans are, you know, accustomed.
Yep.
So, I found that interesting, you know. I mean, compelling the governments largely through the press, already in their control 100 years ago. They're bragging over 100 years ago. And just this whole reference to terrorist attempts, and that's just so much the wording we have around us now.
Yeah, well, that is remarkable when you think, when you put a date to it, yeah.
Yeah, and so I know that there's a lot of bits like that throughout the protocols, and for all of us to incorporate that in our discussions now, it certainly could help at least inspire us to enlighten each other and others more through insight we can gain, you know, from the comparison, from also just the knowledge that there are people who have been planning this far longer, you know, than most could even contemplate. Of course,
that's right. Yeah.
Even with this lockdown,
I'm surprised myself.
I'm sorry.
I'm quite surprised myself when you put it in that, you know, timeline, historical perspective.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could mention a bit from the foreword of this version. It's a nice little booklet form that was printed. Do I have a year here? Let me see. It's it's very real, you know. Just even the photocopies, you know, they're imperfect. You can tell even the original printing, though. It was a sign of the times where printing presses, you know, I mean, as far as straight alignment in every case, and that was not able to be as standardized with the technology, but it gives a nice quality to the authenticity of the well, I mean, when they captured this digitally, it was already an old booklet, clearly, but this was a good translation here. Now we have it translated from the Russian language by Nihlus. I'm not sure how that would be pronounced.
Yeah.
And then this was via Victor E. Marsden, a late Russian correspondent of the Morning Post. Now, Professor Nihlus was a priest of the Orthodox Church in Russia. He published the first Russian language edition of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion in 1905.
Right.
In his introduction, he says that a manuscript had been handed to him about 4 years before, that would be 1901, by a friend, who vouched that it was a true translation of an original document stolen by a woman from one of the most influential and highly initiated leaders of Freemasonry. At the end of a meeting of the initiated in France.
Well,
and we have a quote when it refers to France, that nest of Jewish Masonic conspiracy, unquote. Right. Nihlus adds that the protocols are not exactly minutes of meetings, but a report where a part apparently is missing, made by some powerful person. Nihlus admits the impossibility of producing written or oral proof of the authenticity of this document, and says that we must be satisfied with the circumstantial evidence which abounds. In January 1917, anyone remember anything from that year? Can you say Bolshevik Revolution? Nihlus had prepared a second edition, but before it could be put on the market, the revolution of March 1917 had taken place, and Kerensky ordered the whole edition to be destroyed. Later, Nihlus was arrested by the Bolshevik Cheka, imprisoned and tortured. He was exiled and died in Vladimir on the 13th January 1929.
Right.
And then the translator.
1917 was the first World War as well, Richard.
I'm sorry?
1917 was also the first World War.
Well, it was 1914 to 1918, the first World War. So, yeah, that was 3 years into the 4 years of the war.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, okay, so that was the, you know, Russian Orthodox priest, okay, who published it in the Russian language from the manuscript and all that. And then, so now we have the translator, Victor E. Marsden, to this edition that I'll share the link with you to the PDF and all that. Check this one out when you can. The translator, Victor E. Marsden, the translator of the famous protocols, was himself a victim of the revolution in Russia. He had lived there for many years and was married to a Russian lady. As Russian correspondent to the Morning Post, his fearless description of the events in 1917 incurred the anger of the Soviet. He was arrested and thrown into the Peter Paul prison. When he was finally allowed to return to England after 2 years, his health had been seriously affected. One of his first tasks, as soon as he was able, was this translation of the protocols, which necessitated many hours' work at the British Museum. He later became the Morning Post special correspondent in the suite of HRH, the Prince of Wales, on his Empire tour. But within a few days of his return from the tour, he died after a brief illness. So, that is pretty interesting. I mean,
yeah.
He mentioned too, another point. It may be said with truth that this work was carried out at the cost of Mr. Marsden's own lifeblood. He told the writer of this preface that he could not stand more than an hour at a time of his work on it in the British Museum, as the diabolical spirit of the matter, which he was obliged to turn into English, made him positively ill.
Well, so he was a translator then?
Yeah, that was the translator I described there. But yeah, I mean, even the publisher in Russian, that priest, you know, neither of them had a very good end in their life, but their devotion is certainly admirable, you know, for us to have this. I mean, it's one of many translations out there, but we're thankful for each and every one we have.
Yeah.
May this work, as far as this translator, though, they mentioned, may this work be his crowning moment. In it, he has performed an immense service to the English-speaking world, and there can be little doubt that it will take its place in the first rank of the English versions of the protocols of the meetings of the learned elders of Zion.
Yeah, I mean, well.
Yeah, they mentioned that his literary touch, Mr. Marsden's literary touch, makes it quite readable. His intimate acquaintance with Russian life and the Russian language on one hand, and his mastery of terse literary English style on the other, placed him in a position of advantage which few others could claim.
Well, yeah.
All right, well, I'll be sure to share that link with you to that, this PDF version of the protocols, and I'll share it with everyone of the round table. I've been trying to collect emails. I haven't heard back from everyone yet, if they could text me their email. I'll share the link to this version. It's a nice little version. You could download the PDF for... just check it out online. And
yeah,
it could be a good thing. I'd say. If anyone else wants to call, even briefly here, you know, and I am still trying to see how that goes. I don't know what you gentlemen thought. I tried to broadcast a simulcast last week of that other gentleman. I don't know. I don't know when that may materialize, but you know, I think it's interesting to hear different perspectives. We might get some of those people interacting at our roundtable as a result of it, with, you know, a more overlap that could be positive, perhaps. Yeah, I'm speaking of Stephen Graham. You know, I'm considering having Stephen later in the night out here. And maybe some of his listeners would check out the roundtable, interact at times. You know, Stephen is a bit focused on the Getty, of course. I don't know what you ever made of that. But we know there are underground facilities in all sorts of locations, for that matter. It's not like just... It's to see how one is more important than others. And just very formidable for people on the surface to do anything about.
Well, that's right. There's over 60 of them, isn't there?
Really? 60 underground bases? What, you mean in the U.S. or worldwide?
Yes. No, in the U.S. Wow. I think there's 60. 62 or 63, I think the number is.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And most of them are linked with high-speed underground railways.
And I'm sure you have your share in the UK and likewise over in, what, Brussels, over in Israel, a lot of these hubs, Vatican.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They've got them in Europe. They've definitely got them in the UK. Definitely. No question about it. And the same applies. Some of them are connected here with underground railways as well. High-speed railway.
All right. Yeah, I'm sorry we didn't get any other participants, but a lot of people are emotionally exhausted from what we've been dealing with. Varying people are still even now holding out, hoping that things could turn around in the end. It's already, I'd say, over though. I mean, anyone who I did hear something that I found quite surprising, that the National Guard evidently all turned their backs on the two sides, I guess, lined up when Biden came through. That was a little unexpected to hear that. And then how Antifa in Seattle and Portland, they're anti-Biden with some smashing of the Democratic headquarters windows and graffiti of Antifa saying F Biden and all this. And the police there are saying that they're ungovernable. Well, I mean, the way Portland and Seattle have been up until now, it's no surprise. But yeah, I'm not surprised some of these groups are going to turn on their masters. We see that in the Middle East. It's no surprise to see that with Antifa and BLM as well, right?
Well, absolutely, Richard. And at the end of the day, a lot of these people, you know, they'll turn on a sixpence, as I say. Their allegiance, it doesn't run very deep, you know. And a lot of these rioters, we know they were being paid. And the money, we know where the money was coming from as well. It was coming from Soros.
Looks like we have a call on here. Yeah, no, you make a good point. I believe we have Mick in Georgia. Hey, Mick.
Yes, sir. How are you guys doing?
Good. I'm just trying to help everyone cope with MAGA hopium withdrawal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, you've been doing well, doing a good job at that. And I think that your idea of exploring the protocols is a fine one. And I do want a copy of that translation. I'm not sure if I have that. It's one of those books that you mentioned from the translator who, you know, was so sick in doing it. It's the same thing with me. I can't claim to have read it all. It's one, you know, I read the first five pages and it's just like, okay, enough of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't read it in its entirety, but it's certainly nothing to dismiss after all this time. And I know that you've heard it commented that, you know, they say it's a forgery. That doesn't mean that it's not legitimate, right? Meaning it's not false when you call it a forgery. It just means that they're saying someone else penned it. So
yeah,
I find that quite interesting. They don't deny the contents. They just say it's a forgery. It's a slippery language.
Yeah, for
anyway,
go ahead.
Congratulations to Biden and Harris and the masked DC. Did you enjoy the inauguration?
I enjoyed missing it. I didn't bother. What did you think if you caught much, any?
Well, I'm one of those people who's just following, probably like you guys, so many of the rumors that were swirling around as to what might go down. And that's the hopium, right? But also the worrium, because, you know, they started saying, okay, officially it looks like Trump lost way back in, you know, November 4th, 5th, or whatever. And we kept on getting goalposts moved further and further away. You know, we're waiting for the electoral college to say this or that. And then it was, okay, we're waiting for December 20th. And then it was January 6th was a big day. And everything's just getting pushed further. And finally, there's Biden being sworn in. And it's like, oh, it's a done deal. And hearing terrible echo. Earlier, of course, Trump saying his goodbyes and flying away and all without any kind of event. So it's like, it's the banality of evil, I guess. That's really the thought that came to mind for me. The banality of the triumph of evil is boring, and it'll just start manifesting as it already has, like increasing talk of national mask mandates and travel restrictions. The assistant health secretary of Pennsylvania, the beautiful Rachel Levine. I'm sure that you're aware of them. Are you aware of Rachel Levine, Richard, or Graham?
Maybe you could elaborate. I muted him because he was getting some noise. I could unmute him.
Okay. No, it's okay. Rachel Levine is a transvestite, a Jewish transvestite, health secretary of Pennsylvania.
Oh, is that the one? Yeah. I missed the name. I forgot it. But yeah, I was spreading information on that. I was reporting on her and
them.
Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah. Him or them. Yeah. But yeah, it's a transgender Jewish woman with a background being trained as a pediatrician, no less. If that doesn't put a chill in your bones, I was saying, I don't know what will.
Yeah. So grotesque. I just can't help but feel like it's there for outrageous consumption.
Yeah, right.
To put this grotesque person in front of us as an emblem of national health, it's just like, it's like a prod. It's got to be. It's bait. But I guess, woke people, quote, unquote, you know, just think that this is progress.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I have more of a problem with them, Rachel Levine being them, being very proactive for coronavirus scam for Pennsylvania. Them and Governor Tom Wolf were particularly bad to that state, and that's my old home state. And so she's not only grotesque and yada yada, but she also is one of the mouthpieces that was often cited as, you know, a health authority saying, oh, we need to stay in for, you know, another 4 weeks and everyone has to wear masks. And you know, these people are despicable.
Indeed. Well, if no one else is going to jump in, I guess I might cut it there. I was still going to try to rebroadcast, simulcast Steven's show until we can get him hooked up on here. And, yeah, I don't know. The roundtable, I know a lot of gentlemen jump on the second hour, unfortunately. For me, cutting it to an hour like this, that, yeah, some people don't... Yeah. Aren't always free that early to be able to, but
I know it's a tough juggle. I know you've been trying to figure it out. I listened to Steven's show about the first half hour of it last week, but lost me a little bit, or just didn't engage. I just felt like it was not current enough, considering remember where we were last week.
Yeah.
So it was a digression at the time. It doesn't mean I'm not interested in the subject matter though.
Cool. Well, yeah, in future more, and maybe everyone can interact with everyone else more. You know, some of you gentlemen could even call in, point out some things that he lacks in mentioning or giving credit to at times. Everyone could learn from each other. That's kind of my goal with all of this, you know?
Yeah, that's an admirable goal.
Well, thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'll let you go. I'll let you go so you can get on it. And,
okay.
Just wanted to chime in and say hello and wish you the best, and don't lose faith or hope.
All right, I look forward to
things are going to turn out.
I look forward to you back next week, and yeah, if you could tune back into the stream, Mick, I'll have it on here in a minute or two.
All right, Richard. Have a good night. All
right. Have a good night.
All right, thanks, Mick.
All right, Graham. Have a good evening, sir.
Thanks, Graham. Take care.
All right, take care, Richard.
All right. Cheers, Graham. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, talk to you soon,
Yeah, we'll be in touch over the weekend for sure.
All right. Nice one. Okay, Richard.
All right. Cheers.
Catch you later. Cheers.
And thank you to the listeners. And, yeah, be sure to join soon when you can. Perhaps submit a protocol on the next Roundtable Unlimited. Cheers.
You kiss Medusa's touch, turn into a pillar of salt. To die now would be perfection. Then my loneliness closes in, so I drink a German wine and drift in dreams of other lives and greater times. And drift in dreams of other lives and greater times. Grab my mind, drunken thoughts of wounds and men. Why does the devil leave for us this legacy of loneliness, this cry for you, and a dagger's thrust?